Carmen Vega. I'm a family nurse. I work in primary care in Palma de Mallorca, Spain. I'm going to talk about sense of coherence and relationship to treatment adherence in Spanish children with type 2 diabetes. We all know diabetes is a complex and chronic illness requiring continuous medical care with multifactorial risk reduction strategies beyond glycemic control. Diabetes increases the risk of developing a number of life-threatening health problems, increased medical care cost and mortality, and on the other hand, reduced quality of life. It was reported in 2019, 4.2 million died as a result of diabetes and its complication. In 2017, 5 million dead were assignable to diabetes. That means 9.9% of the global all-cause mortality among people within 20 and 99 years, according to International Diabetes Federation. Besides, the global prevalence of diabetes and impaired glucose tolerance in adults has been increased over recent decades. The investigation carried out in Spain, incidence of diabetes mellitus in Spain as a result of the nationwide cohort diabetes study estimates incidence of diabetes adjusted for the age and sex structure of the Spanish population, and the form of detection of diabetes was 11.6 over 1,000 person year. That means we have 386,000 new cases per year. An incidence of unknown diabetes was 7.9 cases over 1,000 person year. Well, sense of coherence, according to Erickson and Lindstrom, is an adaptive dispositional orientation that enables coping with adverse experience. We all know that sense of coherence has three components: comprehensibility, manageability, and meaningfulness, that according to bibliography act as an protective factor against depression, anxiety, subjective overload in caregivers, and on the other hand, improve pain, quality of life, and adherence to therapy treatment. The objectives in the investigation were to analyze the relationship between sense of coherence and adherence to treatment, Mediterranean diet, practice of physical activity, and glycemic control type in type 2 diabetes. And the other harm was to analyze the relationship between sense of coherence and family function and functional social support in type 2 diabetes. The method we used was a cross-sectional and multi-center study. We use multi-stage sampling. We collect the sample in three health centers: San Agustín, Santa Ponsa, Unidad Básica de Génova, in Palma de Mallorca, Spain. We calculate person correlation coefficient and multiple linear regression. As a result, 130 persons composed the sample. Of these people, 50.8% were no adherents to treatment. Then, to analyze the relationship between sense of coherence and adherence to treatment, Mediterranean diet, practice of physical activity, and glycemic control in type 2 diabetes, we carried out multivariate analysis where independent variable was sense of coherence and dependent variable were no adherence, diet, physical activity, glycemic control. As we can see here, the value in no adherence is below 0.05. So we can consider it that significant with R negative 0.207. To make it more comprehensible, we can see that the sense of coherence relates to adherence to treatment because we use Morse degree questionnaire, and the score in this questionnaire is reversed.
On the other hand, to analyze the relationship between sense of coherence and family function and functional social support in type 2 diabetes, we use independent variable family function APGAR questionnaire and functional social support Gangan questionnaire. In the, the dependent variable was sense of coherence, and as we can see here, p values is below 0.05, so we can see it's significant. With R being in family function 0.434 and in functional social support 0.389. That match with Antonovsky's theory, general resistant resources. He explained that people have resources that make it easier see life as current, structured, and understable. And we can consider it family function and functional social support as part of these resources. So why should we measure the sense of coherence in our patient? Sense of coherence is a really useful screening tool, so we can see in which part is our patient and anticipate other problems if in case the patient has low sense of coherence. So we can improve therapeutic adherence through health education problems, for example. And in case patient has an acceptable sense of coherence, we can encourage him to keep going in the way he's going. So thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to share my investigation with you, with all of you.
Thank you, Carmen. Do we? And we have also a last speaker in now. And are there any comments or questions for Carmen? I have some similar experience in with other situations, more with neoplasms, or also with people with thyroid. That's probably similar with problem with thyroiditis or using hormones, and they were very similar. But what I'm curious, because I have the same problem sometimes, is to think to know if you already start to think also some practical action, or to think also to directly to use something. You have to microphone.
Exactly. I think we should to use it's time to use the sense of coherence in our daily and in our patient, and try to make it practical. It's important the theory study, but what we have already, we have to use it, and yeah, the we have so many investigations that prove that sense of coherence is very important for adherence, for like a protective factor in depression, anxiety. So just we should use it in our daily consult.
Okay, this could be very important. Other comments? If not, we can go to the second speaker, Sarah, who decided to share directly the PowerPoint, I think.
Yeah, thank you also for the very interesting first presentation. Probably as background information, I'm a postdoctoral researcher from a social medicine department in Northern Germany, but I'm going to present on meta analysis, so it's not very relevant where I'm based. I present on a project that is an extension of my PhD thesis, which was concerned with sense of coherence and symptoms of psychopathology in adults. And now I'm going to present on a meta analysis that investigates this relationship in children, adolescents, and young adults. So I will start right away. So what's the background? I think there are many studies that show that there's really a robust correlation between sense of coherence and mental health in adults. So there's like a very famous review I always came back to from Erickson and Lindstrom. And I also did a meta-analysis on the relationship between sense of coherence and symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder in adults a few years ago. I think childhood, adolescence, and young adulthood are very, very important life phases in the context of sense of coherence and in the model of cytogenesis. But I think it's important to look at these phases because actually in this phase, a sense of coherence is supposed to develop as a consequence of early life experience and to be shaped throughout this phase. And I try to illustrate this in a schematic way. I think this is one of 1 million ways to do it. But what I want to say is that one would assume that sense of coherence is developing during childhood and that it's not really stable when it's developing, when it's emerging. So that there's a lot of fluctuation in adolescence and it gets a bit more stable in young adulthood. And then it's supposed to be stable around the age of 30. So this is a bit broken down. It's not the way it will be if you would do an empirical study, but that's the theoretical background. And this is interesting from a theoretical perspective, but also from a psychometric perspective. When we have a look at this curve, it shows us that the internal consistency should stabilize as a function of age and also the temporal stability. So these are aspects of reliability, and reliability is always the base for validity. So it should also limit the potential of sense of coherence to correlate with other constructs as psychopathological symptoms. So what we did, or what motivated our study, was that we think there's less known on a meta level on the relationship between sense of coherence and psychopathological symptoms. And the studies that are out there, they are very different in outcome measures. So some studies look into anxiety, others into depression, others look on internalizing, externalizing symptoms. And they also use very heterogeneous samples. So some studies investigate children with heart diseases, others look into the general population. And this results in very heterogeneous effect size estimations. And this is always a good starting point for meta-analysis. And that's what we did. So we did a meta-analysis on children, adolescents, and young adults. And we define this group as people that are at the most 24 years old. And we conducted a multi-level meta-analysis. I will show you in a minute why this is a useful or a good approach for our question. And we followed PRISMA guidelines. It's not really important to know what PRISMA guidelines are in detail, but this is like the highest standard for doing a systematic review. And we were able to include 59 studies, which comprised 72 samples and a bit more than 41,000 people. And what is very important and what made us very happy was that we were able to include 26 unpublished studies. That's an important point, because meta-analysis is always at risk to be biased by publication bias, so to be influenced by the greater likelihood of significant findings to be published. And this high number of unpublished data increases the validity of our results. And we investigated sense of coherence and a very broad range of psychopathological outcomes that are displayed on the slide. So we investigated internalizing, externalizing symptoms, post-traumatic stress, as I did in adults, depression, loneliness, and also other symptom categories. And that's why we used the multi-level approach, because it's useful to look at the overall effect, but at the same time also to look at different outcomes. So that's what we did. This is like a traditional flowchart to document our search process and our findings for all outcomes. And that's what we find. We find found a significant negative relationship between sense of coherence and psychopathological symptoms. this is not really surprising, but it's the first meta-analytical investigation, so it's good to show it. So we have like minus 0.46 as the overall effect. And what's interesting is that that our findings were quite stable. So this remained nearly uninfected when we excluded one outlying sample. So this was quite good. What is there is like significant heterogeneity, and we have two types of heterogeneity in this meta-analysis because we did the multi-level approach. We were able to disentangle between study variants and between outcome variants. So variants which is linked to different studies and variants which is linked to different outcomes. And we have significant effects for both. So outcomes that come from one study are more likely to be more similar, and also studies that investigate the same outcome. And as you can tell from the forest plot, which is displayed at the right side, this shows here we show the results for the different symptom categories. And you can tell that these are also quite stable. So they are very close to this line in the middle. The only significant difference that we were able to find was that the somatic symptoms, so this is like psychosomatic symptoms being bothered by pain or bowel pain, which is quite frequently assessed in children. This is less strongly related to sense of coherence compared to depressive symptoms and internalizing symptoms. We also see a trend that internalizing symptoms and depression show the strongest association. And what is very interesting is, and maybe it's the most interesting point of this meta-analysis was the moderation by age. So we wanted to have a look at the question if the relationship, the mean relationship, the outcome per study is predicted by studies, sample's mean age. So we expected based on the theory that there will be a stronger negative association when samples are older, so that the effect, the relationship gets stronger with increasing age. And that was what we found. So we found a significant moderation. I have to say, or I have to admit, this is not like a 100% variance account, but that's normal. That's never is the case. There's too much variance. But we see this effect, and this would be in line with the cytogenesis model. So what are the strengths of our study? So I think it's a strength that it's the first meta-analytical synthesis of research in this field. I think that's always good to summarize findings to make them available for practical use. We used the multi-level approach. I think that's quite an appropriate way to analyze the data. We also have quite a large sample, I think, with over 41,000 people that contributed to the meta-analysis. We also were able to include unpublished data. And I'm very thankful for all the authors that sent us that data. Thank you very much. And there are, at the same time, limitations. Like in every analysis or in every study, we were limited to cross-sectional designs. I think that's the most important thing, because it's so important to show longitudinal associations, but they are less frequently reported. So we could not meta-analyze this effect in a way that makes sense on a content base. And we were limited to self-assessments. This is critical because also the psychopathological outcomes were assessed using self-reports, and I also mean parent reports. This is quite a bias because sense of coherence is measured using self-reports, parent reports sometimes, and also the outcomes. So this could be like a same method bias. And there's also a lot of unexplained heterogeneity. We can also, when we include moderators, there's no model which fully accounts for the relevance, which is there for the variance, which is there. So there seems to be other moderating factors that we could not access, or just variance due to low study quality, which might also be the case sometimes. So what can we conclude? So we have a really robust negative association between sense of coherence and psychopathological symptoms. And surprisingly, the size is similar to our findings in adults. So it's not lot weaker in these samples. We think there's a huge need for longitudinal designs. I know that these are more expensive, but I think that's very important also to infer on secondary and primary prevention measures that are based on the cytogenesis model. There would be a strong point for them if we could show this on a longitudinal basis. Something which is very interesting for me as a meta-analysis researcher would be an individual patient data meta-analysis. So an analysis which uses multi-level models, which bases on single patient data, not just on study level. This would be very good because it would increase statistical power, especially for the moderating effects. And what's also very important to study, not just this bivariate relationship between sensory coherence and psychopathological symptoms, but to have a look at the model. So to investigate more about specific generalized resources, everything which was discussed on the conference, it would be very good if this would be mirrored in primary study and would thereby allow for a meta-analysis on these relationships. So that was my talk. Thank you very much. These are the references. And now I'm going to stop the sharing.
Thank you. And questions or comment? Again, in some way, I can make the same questions because you talk about the possibility to use this data in practice. Can you have some more specific suggestions about this, what it would be possible to do?
Yeah, I think it's very important because it shows that there's a robust relationship which could be generalized to different populations. I think the most important point at the moment would be to show that there's a predictive value, so that sense of coherence measured in children when they are 10 is predictive of psychopathological symptoms when they are 13. I think this could be the case. I would really love to see it in the data or in the meta-analytic data, but I think also at the moment it's might be good to have a closer look. Actually, I want to say that I think it's good to train it, or it's good to enhance it in children and adolescents and to maybe include it in schools or to implement it there. I think it's a bit overstated based on our current findings, but I think if there would be enough longitudinal evidence, and I'm just working at longitudinal studies in adults, and I think I am able to show that it's predictive during the COVID pandemic. I think if there is more on this evidence and longitudinal relationship, that's a really a solid base to include it as prevention measure.
Okay, thank you. Other comments or questions? If not, we can go to the next speaker, Demetra Farris. I need 1 second to prepare the video before sharing it. I can share, and then Demetra can make some comments. Just confirm me if when she starts to talk.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to present this study on the evaluation of quality of life and sense of coherence and success in adults with dyslexia. The aim of present study is establishing SOC13 in adults with dyslexia, and secondary objective is to control qualitatively the management of life of an adult with dyslexia and the sense of success and realization despite the obstacle and limits using the strategies that later become researches and is able to manage one's on a certain way life, and consequently also during past play stressful period manage to look good and improve one's health. collection of data relating SOC30 sampling to 80 individuals of majority age with dyslexia through the administration of a questionnaire with also the qualitative variables attached, demographic, dictomics, age, gender, and educational qualification. Also, we have a qualitative data. The interview aims to understand from people with learning disability how they manage this condition, if there are any difficulties, and what obstacle they have encountered, and what the elements that have allowed them to be addressed. Applying these resources with they have put in place by COP to manage stress, give meaning and good management of daily life. These are the question of the interview, structured in 5 questions, was carried out with a sample of 10 adults with diagnosis of dyslexia. Qualitative data results, the confidence interval of the difference between the means of SOC between dyslexia sample and population sample do not show a significant difference, not for females, not even for males. The principal limit are the difficulties in mathematical calculation, especially in subtraction, in the calculation of the rest. In fact, people use a calculator and ATM. In fact, people say the first what helped me with the practical problem of dyscalculia is the ATM. Difficulties driving, especially in confidence with the car, condition and spatial orientation. In fact, the skills is out of guide, technique rate to maintain concentration while driving. It's like an handmade tom-tom. Difficulty to organize the study over time and meet deadline. Research of organization is very important. Using a timetable or planner to organize time. People say, I've become super organized. Let's say that I couldn't manage time if I wasn't organized. Perception of passing time is another problem. The research is music and clock. Music background, it gives times. And the clock, people say, I wear the watch every hour it rings, so I can understand that an hour has passed. And other strategies that dyslexic people using are conceptual maps and color and theater, not only for learn, but also for breaking down shines and difficulties in building relationship and the skills of dialectical, peer support and family support, and talking about it, and awareness of one's own potential. We are one step behind, but no one is stopping you from taking 5 steps forward. Result of interview in combination with the SOC30 questionnaire. The sample examined leads a healthy life with the ability to achieve success by managing their condition in a certain way and making the most of their skills to transform them into resources, building them independently or almost quite by the support of and advice of family, peers, and other dyslexic and our friends. It emerged that the greatest difficulties arise when the children have to interface with the world of compulsory schools, after which during the higher education levels, the difficulties and the insecurity leave room for opportunity and pride and awareness linked to your condition. it can be confirmed that dyslexic, despite often having previous episodes relating to stress or trauma or social stigma, and in the long run with technologies of themselves and their abilities achieve success and healthy lifestyle focused on organization and creativity. Thank you for the attention.
Again, as usual, the question if there are comments or questions from the audience. I was losing you. Yes, David.
Hello. Hi, that was fascinating. As somebody who has dyslexia and has just finished a PhD, I would absolutely agree with that. School was terrible, but it got a lot easier as life went on. I think because you can adapt. I think it's really interesting what the qualitative side has brought to that study, and I like the mix of the two. Did you consider using eugenic theory in a sort of qualitative way to guide those questions, or do you use a different mechanism around the questions?
You have to open the microphone.
I use a different type of questions in different people because people with dyslexia have a different way to learn. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think this is also a very important point because I had also different experience in which in some way you need to adapt your tool to a different situation. As we translate, for example, SOC in different language, we also need to translate several tools for different situation, I think.
Yes, it was so difficult, in fact.
Other comments? I don't know if Oriol is... but you have to open your microphone, yes.
How you administer the sense of coherence tool to the... verbally, you talk, you make the answers, or they have to read for you?
So the question is how you present. It's an oral interview or they have to write. Or what?
Oral interview, yes. Mm-hmm. With not only one person, but
For SOC.
No, is right, is right.
So SOC is right.
Yes. With
you can also tell in Italian 1 second and I can support you if you want.
Allora, anche tramite i mass media abbiamo condiviso.
Poi il SOC era partito, adesso non me lo ricordo, è stato dato scritto via Google o come?
Via Google.
SOC, I was not sure, so I prefer to ask again. SOC was administrated via Google, so it was online administration. I remember we had
a pandemic
yes, problem. I was trying to put the thesis in the right moment.
Yes.
I remember we discussed a lot about this problem, but then it was a successful administration. So we didn't realize big problems in using this kind of tool.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, I think we have just 15 minutes to go to the last speaker. Can you share directly your presentation, Giancarlo?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, a bit, maybe a bit louder.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. This is the title of our research, that our project before share with you some of the insights that we found from this field study. I would like to share some information about the context of our project. The context of our project was would be nice. It is about the family caregiving, in particular in the field of with cancer. And in this slide, you found some of the data and research that support the interest for family caregiving referring to the cancer situation. But I would like only to stress other three points that improve and moved our interest for this field of the of caring, cancer caring, of particular interest in the period or in the era of pandemic. The pandemic shifted a big part of caring from the hospital to the families, in particular referring to the cancer caring, because the hospitals were occupied, the care services are full of COVID patients. This is and that was the result was that was the high the increasing involvement of families in caring of cancer of their cancer patients. This is was the point during the COVID pandemic. And in this period in particular, in these times, in the post-COVID, we see that practically all the national plans of recovery and contains a large amount of resources, financial and organized organization resources devoted to the development of a community service integrated into care. And this is another reason that makes family care so important at this time. And third point important for me is that there is an increasing and more and more ample research, scientific research that support the advantage of moving the cancer care from the hospitals to the ground level and particularly to the family. And this is result, the consequence of this is improving an increase of the family care giver network. And our research was and is actually about the family caregiver. The definition of this figure is not so common, not so shared between different health and social systems, and also. In Europe, what you see is a general definition that is used in our Italian legislation. And what is important is that many researchers and many scientific approaches show that the well-being of caregiver affect also the clinical conditions of the cancer patients. And in this direction, for this purpose, many training interventions took and take into account all the competencies and the technical skills, but fewer intervention concern the factors that affect the caregivers' well-being. And this particular point is important for us, for our work, because our project is about these two institutions in one academic University of Perugia, and one is a voluntary association of cancer and caregiver of cancer patients and caregiving are now working together to build up, to elaborate a toolkit that would help the family caregiver in the management of the daily life, their daily life with cancer patients of their cancer parents. And in all the phases and the critical steps of this of the daily life, from the communication of the diagnosis to managing the therapy to the until the terminal phase. And this is not something really new in as such, because there are many, many tools that with the same purpose. What we think is innovative, or what we would like to introduce as innovation in this field, is that we use the Antonovsky's androgenic model as a guiding and leading framework for planning and creating the toolkit. And even since the beginning of the project, which consists in a big part of research that is still ongoing during these weeks, that is based on a mixed method approach, quantitative and qualitative approach, is centered to the relationship between SOC, sense of coherence, and the burden of care. And this choice, as you can see in this slide, come from the evidence that is really a solid evidence up to now that identified the sense of coherence as a mediator in relation to the burden of care perceived by the caregiver. And the burden of care is one of the concept that one of the dimensions that have a role in orienting the well-being of the caregiver and as a consequence the well-being of the of the patient. So it's important to have an idea on how these two dimensions, the sense of coherence and burden of care, interact among each other. Now, due to the time of this presentation, it's not possible for me to give much too many details about the sort fact, the data that we had with the research, going on with the research. But what I want to stress is that you see something in the slide, very general, but what is important is that effectively we have to. We really had the possibility through the results to understand the main characteristics of our populations of caregivers that we have to take into consideration in the production of the toolkit. So the use this approach combining sense of coherence and marginal care was very, very productive. We put our emphasis, our attention on the, for instance, some critical socio-economic issues like gender, for instance, or the level of the education. And also it was possible to look at those components of the sense of coherence who are important in determining the level of perceptions of burden of care. So in this way, to orientate, to give strong insight regarding the production of the toolkit. This use of the sense of coherence developing a toolkit for training of caregivers for us had and has enormous consequences for the development of the caregiving function in the social health system. And as I said, in particular for our research, it has implication for the training and capacity building of the caregiver. Now, what kind of insight finally we found and we considered as lessons that we learned from this project? At this point, the project is going, is still going on during this last week. First of all, we found that caregiving is really a sort of environment, an homogeneous context of caring and relations, holistic relationships between the caregiver and his or her beloved cancer parent. This give a specific concept is using the terminology of a promotion, we can say that it's a really in a health context and health setting specific for this situation. The other point that we found was that the caregiver, the family caregiver, is a central and important critical part of the network of caring around the cancer patient, the patient, and linked strictly in relation to this is that the when we talk about how to support caregiving for cancer in specific, but not necessary for only for cancer, but also for other non-communicable chronic disease, we have to consider the sort of unit of care between the family, the family caregiver, and the patients. Many authors in their research use really these terms. This is a unit of care because there is a continuous sharing and exchanging of things at various levels, physical, emotional, relational, between the two figures. And the other is another point that is very important that, of course, we to support the coping strategies of caregiver in relation to these beloved cancer parents. And this is in some way a very intriguing situation because we as Herr Bauer told about this morning, we have the need to move from a surviving perspective of health and towards a thriving perspective. Also in a situation very critical and heavy in situation, the situation, so the life situation of a care giving. So what we are trying to do with our toolkit is really to stress healthy, positive orientation, giving to the caregiver the opportunity not only to cope, but also to grow up along this activity. And finally, there is a need, because a lack of knowledge. The results suggest that possible the development, both on the methodological sides, with the use of different multi methods, qualitative, quantitative approaches, need to be put in place to have a clear and deep knowledge in order to develop ways to support the activity of caregivers. So together with this methodological focusing, there is also the need to to understand how the caregiving in the situation that I tried to describe before is integrated, can be integrated within the network of caring of cancer patients, giving or investigating the costs, investigating the use of services by the caregivers and the patients, the organizational models also that can support this activity until the use and impact also of the innovative technologies in communication and in domotics, for instance, to support this important unit of care between the family caregiver and the cancer patients. Thank you.
Thank you. And you should questions or comments? Because now we move from away from the person to the caregiver. Do you have any questions or comments?
Yeah. Just say I did similar analysis in between dementia caregivers and the sense of coherence of dementia caregivers and Barton report. And I did some similar analysis in this way, and Giancarlo explains. It's very interesting. And it could be interesting to compare dementia carers and cancer carers in this case.
Yeah. Yes, but I'm convinced that what we are looking at with the project is similar, can be exchanged with other situations of chronic, at least chronic conditions in which the role of family caregiver is increasing also, and so on. So it would be nice if you you can find my email address on the first slide. So it would be nice to exchange something.
Fantastic.
You can also decide to meet on Wonder tomorrow to talk about this. So you can use the tool. Now we have more or less 5 minutes just to also to know if there are some general comments, because we have some different, but also some similarities in different presentations. So it would be interesting to see if we can see some ideas for the future on the basis of what we have today. Suggestions? As what I could tell that probably in these days we are realizing different maybe the word could be expansions of the idea of health promotion and salutogenesis, because in some yesterday for whom who was in the other conference, but also today in some of the intervention today, we were looking how health promotion and salutogenesis could go also beyond health. So in other areas, in other sectors, looking at equity as social justice. But at the same time, probably we didn't explore enough the potential of salutogenesis and health promotion also in healthcare. So very often we don't know if to stay in healthcare or to go out from healthcare. Probably we are important in both sides and in both situations. And I think that this is also related with our definitions or concept or of health, because if we move from the idea out from the idea of the perfect state of well-being, social, physical, but we think as the Ottawa Charter that health is related to the possibility to achieve aspirations. In this case, it's also important that this idea of health and empowerment is useful for everybody. So for example, the presentation from Demetra was how there are no limits in, but also other presentations, practically all the presentation today, how we can also, we don't have to think now is too late or this is not the white group, because we are looking only for very healthy people. Salutogenesis and health promotion are for everybody, but it's important that we find the way to work with health promotion with everybody. I think this could be one of the message of this afternoon. I don't know if someone wants to add something.
May I say something that I agree totally what you said, and my opinion, we do not run the risk to lose the opportunity of the post-COVID, because for instance in my and our country, there are, I think, no clear idea on how to manage the use of the amount of money. This is my opinion, of course, of the recovery plan. There is strong declaration about the importance of territories, of the primary care, the community, but how this should be functioned. So the consequence is that is open to the health promotion approach, large space. And I think that our responsibility as a researcher is also to produce empirical research in terms of evidence and evidence impact of impact and effectiveness relating the promotion approach in different health and social health settings.
Okay, our final comments? If not, I think we can leave and be ready for the next sessions. Thank you to everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.